You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Melanie Little. Melanie, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So Melanie, the way we start the show is with a huge question. Who are you? What do we need to know about you to start the conversation and to form a kind of foundation for getting to know you?
Sure, that is a big question. So I am originally from the Rochester area. I came to Ithaca in 2009, initially to study acting at Ithaca College, and my road has wandered a lot since then. Mm-hmm. As I was at IC, I discovered I had other interests I wanted to pursue. I studied art, I studied some psychology, and I love the area. I fell in love with the area. Nature is something that's really important to me, and being able to walk to a gorge is a pretty wonderful thing.
Sure.
Yeah, and then I discovered that I really wanted to work directly with people and with children, and that's what I do now.
Okay. And we will unpack more of that as we go on. You mm-hmm. brought some music with you, and the first piece is Fever Ray, When I Grow Up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about that, why you picked that? Or?
Yeah, I partly picked that because, as I mentioned, I work with kids, mm-hmm. and I still very much feel like I'm a kid at heart, and I'm still growing up and sort of dreaming of what can be, and I think it's a fun song.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I was with a summer camp once where we did What's Up to figure out what does it mean to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Here we go.
Be a forester, run through
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Melanie Little. So, Melanie, what kind of experiences, what were some of the experiences that really helped to shape who you are and have kind of brought you to the work and the life that you're living now?
Sure. Well, when I was growing up, my life was very focused on academics in the arts and friendships, right?
Right.
I work in the mental health field, and growing up, I had a lot of very close friends who were going through a lot of really hard things. And I was sort of the mother hen of my friend group. So I very early on developed a desire and a passion for helping other people, relating to them, helping them get through the things that they were going through. And then I was also very creative and engaged in the arts. I was a theater kid growing up. So I did musicals and all that kind of thing, which, you know, taught me a lot about ways of expressing myself, which was a big deal for me because I was very much an introvert and had difficulty with relating with a lot of my peers. So finding this opportunity to get on stage and express myself in that way was a pretty big deal for me. So that was what I initially decided to pursue in college. When I got to college, I grew, I think, as most college students do, in ways that I never expected to. And a lot of that was a lot of challenges. As I was a college student, I came to actually pay attention to my mental health and the needs that I had. I managed to graduate in 4 years while dealing with a lot of difficult things, difficult relationship, and also dealing with the fact that what I had come to Ithaca College for in this very competitive program was no longer what I wanted to do. And that was really a struggle for me. You know, college is not cheap. And having a spot in this competitive program, I felt very much like I had to commit to this choice. So I think that was a big lesson in learning to forgive myself, learning to be able to switch gears and take a step back, and that being okay.
What helped you to turn the corner from judging yourself for not living up to the expectation to what opened the door to you be able to consider forgiving yourself?
Well, I think, you know, you get to a point of beating yourself up and realizing it's not worth it or helpful. I did have a very helpful therapist at IC at CAPS that was pretty instrumental in helping me see that as well. And I started to develop healthier relationships, people who really supported me and cared about me. And I was open with my parents about it. I think initially when I sort of switched gears, I was really concerned that there would be a lot of disappointment. My family invested a lot of time, money, and support into what we all thought was my dream.
It was your dream, but your dream changed.
Right, exactly.
And their investment was in you and not your dream.
Right, and they were able to help me see that. So that was a pretty big deal.
Wow. You talked about being an introvert, but you were kind of the mother hen around your friends. Introverts have a way of drawing people to them in that kind of mother hen sort of way. And a lot of professional theater people are introverts, which is kind of the irony people don't realize. Was theater, why do you think the dream changed? Was the dream of theater doing something not as well as you found you could do better elsewhere, or was it just that your interest changed?
I think it was kind of a combination. Part of it was the lifestyle. I realized I didn't want to spend most of my life auditioning. Was something I was my least favorite part, and I came to realize that would be most of what I would be doing. I realized I didn't want to live in a big city, and that's pretty requisite. And I realized that I wanted to I mean, a lot of what brought me to theater is the way that it can impact and change people. And I realized that I wanted to do that in a more direct way. Actually being a figure in people's lives as my professional life.
Being a real figure as opposed right. to somebody else's character.
Right, exactly.
What experience, when did you discover that you wanted to be real as opposed to be, and that's not, I don't mean, I have a strong theater background too, mm-hmm. in terms of seminary where, but what's the difference for you? What's the different benefit for you?
Yeah.
And for the other?
I think that, from a selfish point of view, you can see in the other person the way that you've affected them. With an audience, you don't know.
Right.
They come, they respond, you may get some sense of how the audience en masse responds to right. the work, but you don't necessarily know the impact you've had. Whereas when you're working with individuals, and particularly working with young people, you can really see how the work is impacting them.
And you may get to know them over years.
Right, exactly.
Or decades, if you're lucky.
Right.
Yeah. That happens some with community theater, but not with what you're trained to perform for.
Right.
Yeah. 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 So as you're, when you graduated, you'd already changed your major at that point? Or?
Well, when I decided to switch gears, I was halfway done with the general drama degree at mm-hmm. Ithaca College. And for financial reasons, I really needed to finish in right. 4 years. So I took that sort of opportunity of having a lot of room for electives at that point to explore other areas. So I minored in just visual art, which brought me a lot of joy and really mm-hmm. helped me work through a lot of the challenges I was facing when I was in college. And I also took some courses in psychology as I was starting to toy with the idea of art therapy. Mm-hmm. So thinking about future avenues there.
Mm-hmm. And you chose then to stay in Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
What drove that?
I would say first and foremost, the community. I have developed some really close, beautiful friendships with people that I went to college with and people who ended up staying as well, and people that I've worked with. And it's just unlike anything I've experienced, just the level of friendship and support mm-hmm, mm-hmm. among that network. It's a beautiful place. It's a place that's easy to navigate. I don't drive. So I live downtown and everything I need is in this sort of small, beautiful world. And then I began work at the Mental Health Association upon graduating, which if you had told me my freshman year of college that was what I would be doing, I would have shaken my head. But I found a real passion in that work and wanted to pursue it.
So why the Mental Health Association point of view? I mean, Mental Health Association is about mental health and, mm-hmm. and promoting healthy practices, and it's not about so much treating there's a term for
clinical
or kind of treating the problem rather than discovering the healthy lifestyle,
right?
You know,
what struck me about Mental Health Association MHA is that they're very person-centered and strengths-based. So acknowledging that everybody has things they're good at, and a big part of wellness is fostering those things mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. putting so much focus on the deficiencies. And they're all about advocacy. And that was something I hadn't really thought about before I'd been exposed to the field, that, you know, there's people who are incredibly vulnerable, and there is a whole field of supporting people who are vulnerable and helping them find their own voice, which I think is really powerful.
Right, right. And it's almost like coaching
mm-hmm.
more than being in the theater. You're
Right, right.
Yeah. Neat. Let's cut to another song. What would you like to play next?
Let's listen to Seaside Town.
Okie doke. Do you want to say anything?
Yeah. Well, I picked this song in part because it contains samples from my favorite childhood movie, Kiki's Delivery Service. And also, I discovered it around my sophomore year of college, and it sort of describes the way I have come to feel about Ithaca as a place to call home.
Cool. Here we go.
Just the kind of place I've always imagined.
Decided not to leave this town. Maybe I can stay and find some other nice people who will like me and accept me for who I am.
Trusting your spirit, yes, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Melanie Little. So Melanie, you said that you've found a community here unlike any other.
Mm-hmm.
That you, what does that mean? In terms of, what does that mean on a daily basis? What does that mean in terms of interactions?
Sure. I don't think I've ever lived or been in a place where on any given day, as I'm walking around, I feel totally comfortable making eye contact and smiling at a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that they will smile back or say hello. Coming from the Rochester area, it's very bustling. You know, parts of Rochester are not very safe. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of this keep to yourself kind of mentality, depending on where you are, of course. And here, just the overall vibe just on the day-to-day feels very different and refreshing coming from that.
And you're experiencing it at about 30 years after I did at someone with the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't that looking in the eye and saying hi so much, especially possibly more downtown. But if you looked, there was more of a where there was a more of a town gown divide back then. I think that there's still there. There's still issues, but there's not the degree of animosity.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. I think that divide is still there, but I think that there's more of a sense of how that divide doesn't really help anybody. Right. And we're working to bridge those gaps.
But a community is also, I mean, it is the feel of the place, which you just described, but it's also the quality of the way we engage each other. And I think you're saying more that you, because you just said that a number of your friends stayed.
Yes.
And so what are the, this is a time of major life transition. How do you, how are you in each other's lives?
So we're very close. It's like a second family, definitely. And, you know, my closest friends are all young women. And, you know, I think as a society, young women tend to be pitted against each other for our differences, for in competition. There's a right way and a wrong way to be a young woman. And I think that in around here, at least among the young women that I know, there's a sense of trying to go against that and seeing how we can be allies for each other and build sisterhood. So some of my closest friends are young women that I've lived with, that we've tended our garden together.
You have a garden.
We have, yes, I have a garden. And yeah, just finding ways of supporting each other because we're also all away from our families. So we're sort of it for each other.
Right, right. And are you anticipating that, in anthropological terms, is this a liminal time where you're between one time and another time, and this is the transition where you'll come out of it somebody, you know, different, or you'll go on to the next stage? Or is this kind of a time, a way of living that you anticipate holding on to for decades to come?
Yeah. You know, it's hard for me to say. I'm not a big, you know, a big planning way ahead kind of person. And I tend to look at things more on a continuum and sort of just following the path where it leads. I am very happy with my life here as it is. But I could see how I might seek change. But it's really hard for me to say right now.
Right, right. No, yeah. And that's not so much a commitment as just a sense what what I'm and in your community are I sense that it's almost all people of about the same age, or and what do you gain by that, and how do you interact with others who are kind of younger or older? I mean, you work with younger ones, but how and you probably are a supervisor, you know, and other kinds of relationships. How does that all play out? Because a real community cuts across the generations.
Sure.
I mean, I mean a fuller sense of community. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I would say, you know, the benefit of me and the people I'm really close with being around the same age is we're going through different stages of life together.
Right.
So supporting each other as we sort of find our career paths and relationships and stability as young adults and sort of floundering and finding our way. And then as far as, you know, reaching across the generations, really my work has led me to find connections in that way. Mental Health Association, we're very much like a family. It's a very small office, and I feel very close to all of the people I work with. And we have our social club that is attached to our offices that's run by and for individuals who've experienced mental illness. And that's all ages, right?
Right.
So I'm 18 and up. But I've gotten to know a lot of people in the community with really diverse, you know, range of experiences through my work. And that's something that I really value about it.
What do you, so now what is it that you do at the Mental Health Association? What is your work?
Sure. So at this time, I'm the director of the Youth Services Program. So that is many things. I facilitate a social support group for teenagers every Thursday from 5 to 6:30. And that's a drop-in group where we do activities and have discussion and share a meal. I supervise a program that we run at the YMCA on Saturday afternoons from 12 to 4, and that's a recreation respite program to help kids build social skills and have fun and give their parents a break. Sometimes mom will go upstairs and take a nap or go shop or whatever they need to do. I also supervise a team of staff that work one-on-one with youth in the community that are at risk for residential placement or hospitalization for mental health issues. And I also will be directing our summer day camp, Kids First. And I help to organize our youth events. We have a family carnival coming up on May 6th from 12 to 4 at the Henry St. John building, and that's going to be a lot of fun. That's a big project we're working on right now. So.
It's neat. I met you and as a leader in the mental health first aid course, which is something I would heartily recommend for people to consider. It's just the basic skills you need to know to be a really good friend to somebody who needs a little encouragement or direction about what steps might be helpful to take next to be as healthy as they can.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that program, or how does that fit into your philosophy of your work?
Sure. Well, you know, I think the biggest theme in the mental health first aid training is to come from an approach of compassion rather than stigma and judgment. And I don't know. For me, it's just sort of a no-brainer. I think everybody should take this training because it's just, you know, 1 in 5 people in a given year deal with a mental health issue. So we all know someone, and it's very likely that, you know, we ourselves might go through something. And it's, you know, lots of people learn CPR and never encounter someone who has a heart attack. You're far more likely to need your mental health first aid skills. So I took the training right around when I first started in the administrative staff at Mental Health Association, and I loved it, and I wanted to bring it to other people. Mm-hmm. So last summer, I went away to Albany and did a week-long training to become a facilitator. And then this fall, I'm actually going to train to provide the youth version, which teaches folks how to address adolescents that are facing these issues. Mm-hmm.
And I've said to about 150, 200 local religious leaders that 10 to 20% of your congregation should go through this in order to just have the coverage that when somebody's around who can actually respond.
Well, thank you for your support in that way.
And I hope that people will take it seriously. These are wonderful skills.
These
are very, very wonderful skills. Let me do the station ID, and then we're going to cut to music again. You decide. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And our guest on this hour is Melanie Little. What should we play next?
Let's play Raining by Rebel Bucket.
Here we go.
Oh, it's raining on the back porch, and I'm feeling kind of blue. It's raining.
So, Melanie, one of the things that really impressed me in the beginning of the show was that with the clarity with which you made a really hard transition in college, you know, and the way in which you attended to yourself and attended to your parents mm-hmm. without getting, I mean, the way you tell it now has got to be a lot different than how it was. I mean, in terms of drama and trauma mm-hmm. and all this other stuff. But just coming to that peace is incredibly powerful. Now that you've finished college and you've been out for, what, 4 years, how has this young adult phase been easier than you thought it would be or harder than you thought it would be?
Yeah. I think the things that were easier for me was sort of the basically just learning how to take care of the day-to-day, getting up, going to work, having an apartment.
Being a predictable sort.
Yeah, yeah, having a routine. I discovered how much I love to cook. And those sort of, you know, basic things. Learning to sort of love these sort of adulting things that, mm-hmm. You know, seem like a lot to manage when you're in college. Yeah.
So that was easier.
That was easier than I expected. Right. Finding routine and independence, being independent.
Right. So what was harder?
What was harder was really, well, a couple of things. Learning to maintain healthy relationships and take care of myself first. That's been a real challenge throughout my life. It's a lesson I've learned again and again.
You were the mother hen back in
yes, exactly, in junior high, and high school. I kind of yeah. still am. I like to take care of people. I like to welcome people into my life, baggage and all.
Right.
And
warts and wonders.
Yes, exactly, and I hold that as a value that's really important to me, but it has been a real learning curve as I've gotten older to learn when to say no, when to take a step back and mm-hmm. take care of myself first. That's been really difficult and something I'm learning every day.
Right. When do you notice that, I mean, actually, or I'm trying. Let me get a question out of here because what you're saying is very, very poignant and also very. How do you know that you have kind of overcommitted or allowed somebody maybe in closer than you had actually made a commitment to?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there are two mistakes that work slightly differently, and how do you then
pull back,
adjust?
Well, I would say, you know, as I've learned to take care of my mental health over the years, I've learned to be a lot more self-aware of just my feelings on the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm well, I'm a very joyful person. I'm very fun-loving and fun-seeking. And when I am stretched too thin, those things sort of start to fall away.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself spending more time anxious and upset than I am joyful. So that's a pretty good indicator that things are off balance.
And that's your internal, your internal barometer, internal homing mechanism, telling you where to go. But do you begin to notice it in certain kinds of interactions or things?
Well, if I feel like I'm getting, you know, really wrapped up in a particular person's stuff, I'll notice that. Full disclosure, I've been known to neglect other relationships.
Sure.
It can bleed out in that way. And that's something that's really hard for me because I care so deeply for the people in my life. So that's an indicator.
And you just kind of get pulled way too far into one.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's been a challenge. And taking care of my health in general is usually a good indicator. If I'm definitely somebody who gets sick when they get stressed,
right.
So that's a good red flag for me when things are out of balance. And then as far as, you know, adjusting, that's something I'm still really learning how to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you know, in some places where I've overcommitted, things have ended maybe kind of messy or abruptly and in ways that hurt. So I'm still learning how to navigate that and how to, I don't know, maintain a relationship while being able to step back and set a boundary.
Right, right, right. And how does, I mean, what was important in your story about changing focus in college was mm-hmm. coming to terms with letting go and forgiving.
Yes.
And how does that play, that piece play in a messy relationship? It's hard oftentimes to do it on both sides.
Right, right. Yeah. And it is both sides. You know, there's this need to forgive myself for having to let go. And a need to forgive the other person for asking so much. And sometimes they don't ask and I'm just giving. And
right. It's like, that's where you got sucked in without even knowing it.
Yeah, I didn't ask for this, but here you are. But I think, you know, coming back to looking at it that way is this, you know, forgiveness and moving on is what helps me move through those changes, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
It's, I mean, in a certain sense, forgiveness allows the smoothing, the easing of a transition that would be very painful or clunky.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So how have you had to change in ways that you would not have chosen or anticipated, but it's proving a good thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's sort of relates into what we were just talking about, learning to put my foot down. Mm-hmm. that's something that's hard for me. And you know, I've lived in places where I had lots of roommates, and I work with children who
need limits.
I need limits. Yep. And sometimes kids are really hard to say no to. Because they're kids and you can't fault them for what they want and what they do, but they need that structure and they need to learn. And honestly, I would say that working with kids has helped me learn to put my foot down and to have some confidence, because when you're working with children, you don't have time to really think, is my gut instinct right here?
Right.
You just have to go and trust that you're making the right choice. And now that I supervise staff also that work with children, I have to rely on that more and more. So as I've developed that in my work life, I've noticed that it's come out in my personal life more as well, in ways that do serve me, you know, and putting my foot down and, you know, not being treated in ways that I don't want to be treated, having limits for myself, mm-hmm. What I allow to happen in my home.
Right.
So that's been a big learning curve.
Right. And this is part of developing the gravitas of adulthood, mm-hmm. and also even if you have a sense that you have that, it's a practice mm-hmm. of actually living it, and it never does, and it continues for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But what's refreshing is that you seem to be far happier with it than not.
Yes, yes. It was a hard adjustment to be happy with that, with learning to be assertive, I would say. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What did you fear? What made it hard? What was the fear that set it up as a problem?
I don't want to be mean. I tend to think about other people's feelings before my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has, you know, I've sort of had to unlearn that.
Right.
So.
Right. And you can honor the fact that you've hurt somebody, and you can honor the fact that they hurt you. And hurt is just the friction. You know, sometimes friction feels good and sometimes friction is really bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just, I'm just trying to, just thinking here for just one second. Where do you go where do you look for examples of people? I mean, you talk about learning the skill in the immediate moment. I mean, you're probably just implementing things you've thought about, but kids force you to do it without second guessing yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then applying them in your own life. But where do you seek models or feedback or, you know, from where do you, or resources outside yourself? What do you go to for wisdom? Which
sure.
is, for lack of a better word.
As far as work? Or
no, no, as far as this, these changes that you're carrying okay. yourself through.
Yeah. Well, I have a few people in my family that mm-hmm. are incredibly supportive. I would say my sister is a really big role model for me. She is 10 years my senior, and for a short while when we were young, we were actually estranged. So it, I think that that...
10 years is a big...
It's a big difference. Yeah. It is. And so she's always been somebody I really look up to. She stands her ground, and she's been through some really hard stuff. And she is a mother to two beautiful boys who are the apples of my eye. And she's just a very strong person. And she's someone that I can, you know, call whatever I'm going through. And she has my back, and she reminds me that my instincts are good mm-hmm. and to take care of myself and not hold on to things that can be let go of.
And what changed? When did you cease to be estranged? How did you begin to see her as a resource as opposed to a challenge?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was very young during mm-hmm. that time, so it mm-hmm. was more of a...
And I'm speaking, I have five older siblings. Yeah. I have four sisters who are 12, 14, 16, and 18 years mm-hmm. older than me, so they, yeah, I never, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I always adored her. She's my big sister, she's my half-sister. Mm-hmm. So there was some, you know, family drama, as occurs in families, that led us to be not in each other's lives for a little while.
Sure.
So when she came back around, I was so excited because I had a big sister again, and I didn't know if I would again.
Right.
So that was a pretty big deal.
Right. So you were estranged by reasons other than your own choice.
Right.
And that's a whole different ballgame.
Right.
Neat. So let's shall we play Genesis?
Sure.
And do you want to say anything about that piece?
Well, this is a piece by Grimes, and she is a female electronic artist, and she's sort of fairy-like. I sort of connect with that. And there's not a lot of women in electronic music.
That's right.
So I think she's very cool, and I love what she does.
Here we go.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is Melanie Little. So, Melanie, we talked about your change of identity and your migration through Ithaca College into a different career path. But we didn't talk about your experience at Ithaca College. And, mm-hmm. and what was that like?
Mixed. There were some things about Ithaca College that I really loved. I had some really tremendous professors that opened my eyes to a lot of things. I had a really wonderful time in the visual art classes mm-hmm. that I took. It's a really tiny, often overlooked art department, mm-hmm. But there's some really great stuff. I fell in love with printmaking while I was there, and got some really wonderful experience there. I did struggle socially while I was there, in part because I come from a very working class neighborhood and background. I was at Ithaca College largely. I wouldn't have been able to go without the scholarships that I had.
And the competitive program.
Competitive program. So, you know, there were quite a few kids there with similar backgrounds as mine, but there were also a lot of kids from a very different background that was sort of difficult for me to relate to and connect with. My junior and senior year of college, I worked 30 hours a week.
On top of school
full time. So I missed out a lot on a lot of the opportunities for social connection that my friends had. I mean, you know, in theater school, I would have friends, oh, we're going to go to New York City and see a Broadway show this weekend. And that was not something that was ever an option for me. So that made it hard. But I did find people who were in similar shoes and in different shoes that I could relate to and share that experience with, and just people who, I think in college, your idea of work ethic changes over time. Mm-hmm. And I found, you know, getting down and dirty and doing hard work that wasn't necessarily my passion was something that I had to do.
Right.
And that was something a lot of my peers hadn't really experienced yet. I'm sure they went on to have to experience that. Yep. But we were sort of in different places a lot of the time. And while I was at college was when I really started to both notice as my mental health degraded and tend to it. I struggled in high school as well, but I was high functioning.
Yep.
So it was very,
it'll get you every time.
Exactly. It was overlooked. I was a college bound student. I was in the plays. And you know, no one noticed when I would leave science class to cry in the bathroom. So when I came to college and there was counseling and psychological services right on campus, I was like, okay, let's just do it. Let's just try it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it will help. And it did. I don't think I would have graduated in 4 years without CAPS. But that was a really difficult journey for me. I had to reevaluate my relationship that I had been in for most of my time in college, and learn how to take care of myself in ways that I had never thought about. So that was really challenging, ultimately a wonderful thing, mm-hmm. and I'm so thankful that those resources are there. So it was a lot of growth and growing pains.
Mm-hmm. And I also hear that under the discipline of needing to finish in 4 years, because that's what you had a scholarship for, I took a leave of absence in my fifth semester, so I lost a semester scholarship,
mm-hmm.
but I needed to take a leave of absence. I had to get out because I was not functioning,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to get out before I flunked,
right?
And for a semester, and but that allowed me time to just watch how other people were coping,
mm-hmm.
and doing what I didn't know how to do,
mm-hmm.
Because I came from a poor a rural background, where we didn't have the kind of study skills or stuff that other kids had, or let alone the financial stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just needed to watch, how do they have fun mm-hmm. and get the work done? Because I had no clue. And what I wonder also in part is part of this time being in Ithaca out of college has afforded you time that you didn't get.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
You know, and there's a way in which that just that kind of ambling time where you just observe each other and you share and you make, you know, some prescient comments on each other's lives, but also some absurd comments. Mm-hmm. And you get in each other's lives in interesting sorts of ways. It's just, you can't rush it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't rush it.
Absolutely. And I think that is the part of growing up that has been easier than I expected to. I never thought about having as much free time as I have and time to breathe and observe, and that's really helped.
As a high functioning or as an over functioning person, you don't have free time.
Right.
And you don't know how to allow it for yourself, and you don't know how to treasure it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I struggle with that because, you know, there have been times when I have taken it. There's been times when depression has taken it out of me. Mm-hmm. And there have been times when I have just felt like I've got to shoulder this through. And it's not necessarily a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Being high functioning is a mixed blessing.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you for that digression. Mm-hmm. What do you do now on a to take care of yourself? Throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, and how do you know you need to do it? And I'm really interested in, you know, intellectually, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever, you know, this, how do you take care of yourself as a whole person?
Yeah. I would say one of the things I do most consistently and try to focus a lot on is staying connected with my loved ones and my friends and my family. I live alone now, and that is new for me. Mm-hmm. And something I do almost every day is I make a phone call. I have a best friend back home that we can talk for hours. I talk to him often every day. Mm-hmm. I reach out to my family back home. I make sure to spend time with my friends in the area, and keep myself from getting isolated. 'Cause when that happens, that's when I'm really in trouble. So I would say that's what I do most consistently. I try to eat well. As I've grown up, I've learned to love vegetables, which is an exciting thing I didn't see happening. And now I grow
now you
them.
Do it.
Now I love vegetables, and I even grow them. So I do try to eat healthy, and I definitely see how that affects my mood and my physical well-being. I do yoga. I wish I could be more disciplined with my practice, but I do always come back to it. It's something I've sort of wandered to and away from for many, mm-hmm. many years. But when I am really struggling, that's something that, okay, I know it's time to start doing this again and find my breath and my center again. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's always been really helpful for me. I mentioned I have recently taken up gardening, and I've been finding that to be tremendously helpful. I love to be outside. I love to be in nature, and I like to get my hands dirty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's been a big thing. Yeah. And taking a rest, allowing myself breaks, because right. that wasn't something I had in high school, in college. It was go, 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 go all the time. So letting myself lay around and do nothing, mm-hmm. or watch something funny. I watch a lot of comedy and a lot of comedy shows, and that keeps me laughing, which is important.
Yeah, and it's like being kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And letting that be a conscious choice,
yeah,
as opposed to a default, as opposed to a, well, I can't do this, so I'll just do that,
right?
You talked about you made kind of a funny comment around the discipline of yoga. When I took my leave of absence from Cornell back in 78, and I was out the summer of 79, I meditated for an hour twice a day for that summer.
Mm.
And I've never had to do it with that kind of rigor, because all I have to do is straighten my spine, breathe deeply, and I will yawn, because my body remembers. Even in all that I have to do for discipline, I don't need to. I used to think I had to beat myself up for discipline, mm-hmm. But all I have to do is remember.
Yeah.
And when I, because it's in my body, and if I remember it, it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I do go back to my yoga practice, it's like it's been there waiting for me. Yeah. And welcome
yeah.
back.
Yeah. And so I guess what I'm, and this is my little soapbox to keep people from shitting all over themselves. And about a third of the guests that I interview have a practice that is really, you know, they have it, they have something they do every day or at a certain time every week or three times a week. And that works for them,
mm-hmm.
but most people don't.
Right.
It is as it comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And we just work in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Melanie, it has been a delight to get to know you.
Likewise, Eric. Thank you so much for having me.
You want to close with, you want to describe your last song, Fiona Apple, Extraordinary Machine?
Yes. Fiona Apple is a big inspiration to me. I love her voice. I like to sing myself. I like to sing her songs. and she, through her music and her career and the things that she's sort of spoken openly about what she's dealt with, I think she's very resilient. And this song is very much about resiliency. Mm-hmm. And she says, I can't help it. The road just rolls out behind me. And I can relate to that a lot. So, yeah, that's why I picked that one.
It's beautiful. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I certainly haven't been shopping for any new shoes, and I certainly haven't been spreading myself around. I still only travel by foot, and by foot it's a slow climb, but I'm good at being uncomfortable, so I can't stop changing all the time. I notice that my opponent is always on the go, won't go slow so's not to focus, and I notice he'll let you ride with any guide as long as they go fast from whence he came, but he's no good at being uncomfortable, so he can't stop staying exactly the same. If there was a better way to go, then it would find me. I can't help it, the road just rolls out behind me. Be kind to me or treat me mean, I'll make the most of it. I'm an extraordinary machine. I seem to you to seek a new disaster every day. You deem me due to clean my view and be at peace and lay. I mean to prove, I mean to move in my own way and say I've been getting along for long before you came into the play. I am the baby of the family, it happens so everybody cares and wears the sheep's clothes while they chaperone. Curious, you're looking down your nose at me while you appease. Courteous to try and help, but let me set your mind at ease. If there was a better way to go, then it would find me. I can't help it, the road just rolls out behind me. Be kind to me or treat me mean, I'll make the most of it. I'm an extraordinary machine. Do I so worry you? You need to hurry to say it's very kind, but it's to no avail. I don't want the pain for it to everything will be just. Thank you.
can't help it, the road just rolls out behind me. Be kind to me, or treat me mean. I'll make the most of it, I'm an extraordinary machine. If there was a better way to go, then it would find me. I can't help it, the road just rolls out behind me. Be kind to me, or treat me mean. I'll make the most of it, I'm an extraordinary machine.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen.